Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
This footage was recovered off a JVC GR-SXM260U camera I found at a secondhand store. In the following text, I have tried to recount the events captured on this camcorder. Entry 1. The footage begins by panning over an autumn valley. A woman's voice can be heard in the background. "Beautiful, isn't it?" A man responds, most likely the person holding the camera. "Shut up, I'm trying to film." His tone is jovial. After a few seconds, he adds, "You're right, though. It really is." The sun is setting. Entry 2. The woman is walking in front of the camera, following a trail leading through the forest. She is wearing a bright red windbreaker, beige cargo pants, a large backpack, and black hiking boots. The man behind the camera can be heard breathing hard. "Wait up!" The woman stops and turns her head to face the man. She smiles and begins walking towards him. "You're too slow," she chuckles. "F you," the man responds, both beginning to laugh. The woman reaches out her hand. "Here, I'll hold that for you." The camera is handed over to the woman, and the man comes into view. He bends over, placing his hand on his knees. "Oh, come on, look around you. Look at all this beauty. I mean, don't you just get energized? What do you say if we run the rest of the way, huh?" The camera swings around as the woman is talking, capturing the woods around them. The trees differ in their vibrant hues of orange, yellow, and red. There is a shape moving among them. Capture only for a brief moment, a dark brown hide and a hulking body. The man laughs. Entry 3. Darkness. To begin with, nothing of value can be made out of the video captured. Light shuffling and breathing can be heard. "What is that?" the woman whispers. "It's probably just an animal. It must have gotten our scent of the food. It should be all right. Since we put it up in a tree away from the tent, it shouldn't get too close." Something heavy can be heard circling the campsite. Aside from the sound of the animal and the man and woman breathing, it is deadly quiet.
"What if it's a bear?"
The woman's voice quivers.
"It'll be all right, honey. Sounds like it's moving away."
The sound of the animal lessens gradually, and after 3 minutes, there is complete silence. Entry 4. The man is filming the campsite. Surrounding the couple's olive green tent are dozens of deep, wide tracks. The man puts his foot into one of the tracks. It is around 3 times larger than the man's boot.
"Big son of a bitch," the man mutters.
"This doesn't feel safe, Adam. What if it's still around here?"
The woman sounds upset.
"Yeah, let's pack up and get out of here."
Entry 5. The man is filming down a valley. A light patter of rain could be heard. Walking through the valley is a grizzly bear accompanied by 2 cubs. The camera zooms out and we can see the woman standing with her arms crossed. She seems concerned. She frowns, The camera zooms back in on the bears. She must have been the one rummaging through our campsite last night. Probably want to get her kid a quick snack. Suddenly, the three bears dash into the forest. Entry 6. It is dusk. We hear the couple walking. Further up the road in a clearing stands a log cabin. My grandpa built this cabin back in the 40s. It ain't much, but he built it all by himself. And I mean everything. He was the one cutting down the trees. He built the fireplace. It was pretty much all he left behind when he passed. Suddenly, all the nondescript noises of the forest died. No bird call. Not one twig snapping. Nothing. The couple do not take any notice. He must have been a quiet man, your grandpa. The man sighs. Yep, all to wither down and die in the grand span of 3 months. I'd never seen my dad like that. Bloodshot eyes, stooping shoulders. Shoot, man, it got to me. That was the worst part. They walk in silence. Cancer's a bitch, she says. Cancer's a cunt. The couple walk for about 1.5 minutes in silence. The man films the ground. Suddenly, something charges the man. A grunt. He is struck either from the side or from the back. The camera falls to the ground. The woman shrieks. A high-pitched wail which pierces the veil of acidic silence. Until her screams stop. There is thrashing and moaning. Another short scream, this time coming from the man. There is a wet squelchy noise and the man is silenced. We hear shuffling. Whatever attacked them is turning its attention towards the woman now. She is crying. Light and defeated sobs are the only sounds that escape her. Then there is silence again. The attack lasts for about 4 minutes. Entry 7. A wooden floor, light breathing. Then the mutter of a man. Shit. Entry 8. A man sits in front of the camera. His head is partially wrapped in white gauze and his eyes are sunken. He is sitting in front of a dark brown wooden table. In front of him is a plastic bottle of water. It is half full. Behind him is a wall made of logs. Heavy rain patters against the roof of the cabin. Thunder could be heard in the distance. He sighs deeply. My name is Elliot Anderson. I am 49 years old. I am a resident of Bend, Oregon. At this particular moment, I am in a forest in Wyoming. There is a storm brewing outside, and I am completely effed. Although less screwed than I would have been if I hadn't found this cabin. The man stops and takes a swig from the water bottle in front of him. Anyways, I hope the owner doesn't mind me taking shelter in here. I lost my backpack somewhere along the way. There was so much rain and thunder. Complete darkness. I fell and hit my head. It was bleeding when I got here, but I'm all patched up now. Lucky the owner had some medical emergency stuff. Too bad he didn't stack up on some more water and canned beef. I'm hoping the storm blows over fast so I could get the F out of here. Signing off. Entry 9. The man is sitting in front of the camera again. His head is in his hands. The water bottle had fallen over. It is empty. A kerosene lamp is burning. I figured out how to watch what's already been recorded on this thing. He pauses. Suddenly, thunder and lightning bears down onto the cabin. The man is illuminated. Waves of flooding rain crashed against the walls, roof, and windows. Shoot, they were mauled. I can't get over the sounds. I never heard someone scream like that, let alone cry like that. They must have invaded that bear's territory. It had cubs. They get crazy when someone closes in on their kids.
Jeez-o, there's a bear out there. Shoot.
I'm all out of water, and there isn't shit to eat in here. I'm going to wait a while. I'm praying that it lets up. Otherwise, I'm going to have to brave the storm.
He pauses again.
If I don't make it out of here, I love you, Sarah, and I'm sorry things are all messed up. I'm a dick, I know. I don't deserve you. But if I get through this, I'll never hurt you again.
The man sobs, his voice breaking.
I wish I could be with you in our warm bed. Shoot, I'm a freaking idiot. I love you, Sarah. I love you so, so much.
Entry 10.
I found them.
It is the voice of Elliot. Not the couple, the bears. I tried to push through the storm. I was walking down the dirt road. Some of the trees had fallen down. The wind was as strong as 10 men. I felt like I was being pushed towards the cabin by some invisible rope. I climbed over one of the fallen trees blocking the road. And that is when I found them. All three of them. Massacred. They had all been mangled. Something had snapped their bones like they were twigs. The cubs were nothing more than crushed piles of sliced meat and bloodied fur. Something had slit their stomachs open. There was intestines spilling out of their bare chest cavities. A mother and her babies. The teeth in her maw had been reduced to dust. Her entire snout had been crushed. I turned and ran right back to the cabin. Something has been pacing outside the walls. Something big. At first I thought it was another bear. A freak of nature. It would have to be able to do such a thing. But it isn't a bear. Bears don't knock.
This story takes place in 2007 when I was a 9-year-old kid. I live in Michigan, and it was the summer before I started third grade. It was a traditional thing for my dad and I to go up north and stay a weekend visiting his buddy who had a cabin on a lake, and this year was no different. I was excited as I always was, but this time I was particularly happy that my dad's wife and her kids weren't gonna be with us. The drive to the cabin was a long dirt road, with a smaller cabin and fireplace near the front. It was also surrounded by a thick woods that stretched along both sides of the driveway, which extended about 100 yards until it opens up into a spot where people park their cars. Just beyond the cars was a bunkhouse, and beyond the bunkhouse was the front yard of the cabin. As we pulled up, my father reminded us that we would have to camp out in the front yard and sleep in a tent together because the bunkhouse was already being occupied by his friend's kids. I didn't mind at all, as the sounds of nature helped me fall asleep. The sun was setting as we unloaded the truck, and the leaves swayed with the breeze. The branches danced and casted shadows along the yard that occasionally changed when the sun dipped behind the clouds. The entire property was surrounded by woods and enclosed within a chain-like fence, with the front yard having a gate that opened up onto the deck. Once you were on the deck, there was a table and grill to your left and a doorway to the cabin on your right. If you kept going, you'd go down 4 steps and come across a hot tub on the left, and another doorway on the right, followed by the rickety wooden stairs that led down to the lake. After we had said hi to everyone, my dad and I started pitching our tent. We glanced to the right and noticed there was a small clearing about 50 yards out in the woods. I didn't pay much attention to it, and we finished setting up the tent in no time. We then proceeded to join everyone for dinner on the deck, followed by a fire down by the lake. After a few hours of making s'mores, listening to everyone tell ghost stories, and watching some fireworks that were set up on the dock, I found myself exhausted from the trip and started saying goodnight to everyone. I gave my dad a hug goodnight and started heading up to the deck and out to the front yard. I unzipped the tent, crawled into my sleeping bag, and passed out. I don't know what time it was when I woke up, but I could hear my dad snoring lightly next to me as I assumed it was well into the night. One thing I picked up on right away was that it was dead quiet outside. Instead of hearing the normal summer sounds that I'm used to hearing at night, there was nothing. There were no crickets chirping, no owls hooting, not even the rustle of the leaves or twigs rustling as the nocturnal creatures came out for food. It was dead silent. I felt extremely uneasy, but I also realized why I had woken up. I had to pee. I slowly crawled to the front of the tent and reached for the zipper, hesitating for a moment before unzipping the door. I poked my head out and was met with the eeriest silence I had ever heard. The moon was full and illuminated the trees with their branches as they sat above me silently. The sky was clear and the stars twinkled as they danced in the darkness. I slowly stepped out of the tent and felt the morning dew from the grass hit the bottom of my feet. I glanced up at the sky, just in awe at how clear it was. I never got to see the stars this bright back in the city, and I liked to cherish the moments when I could. I walked over to a big oak tree that was just inside the fence and started doing my business. I lowered my head to the clearing in front of me, and that's when I heard it. The sound pierced through the silent night. Chills ran down my spine, and I froze in place as my head darted in the direction of the woods, trying to locate the source of the sound. It happened again. This time it was echoing by a few more. What followed were the familiar yips of coyotes, and I was relieved when I saw them emerge from one side of the clearing and exit into the other. I stood there quietly as I observed the canines running and jumping through the clearing. When the last of them had disappeared, I tapped on the last of my business and glanced down to zip up my shorts. When I looked back up, I saw something I will never forget. There, in the clearing 50 yards away, was what looked like a coyote mixed with a human, and it was standing on its hind legs, looking right at me. It had pointy ears, thick dark fur, a snout that was snarling and revealing a set of wicked teeth, and its eyes were yellowish-orange, staring straight into mine. The thing that terrified me most about this thing was its size. If I had to guess, it would have stood at 8 feet tall. I was frozen stiff, but that quickly changed when the thing looked up and let out the most horrific scream I had ever heard. Nothing about it sounded human. I tripped backwards over my feet and dashed back into my tent, zipping it shut and diving under my sleeping bag. I then heard the grunt of a large animal, followed by a rattling of a chain-like fence, and then the unmistakable sound of feet hitting the earth. I closed my eyes shut tight and hoped to God that this thing would go away. I laid there trembling in my sleeping bag as I heard a set of 2 feet slowly stomp around our tent. After a few minutes, I pulled my sleeping bag slightly down below my eyes, and I saw its shadow in front of the tent. Its pointy ears tilted back as it let out another scream, before running towards the driveway of the cabin and disappearing into the night. I laid there in my sleeping bag, paralyzed by fear, hoping it wouldn't come back. After what seemed like forever, the sun finally came up. I asked my dad if he had heard the screams last night, and I told him about what I saw, but he assured me it was just a nightmare and that no such thing existed. I dropped it shortly after and kept this story mostly to myself until now. I don't know what it was for sure that I saw that night, but I did see it. And I do know this. I will never set foot in the Michigan woods alone at night, ever again. This is another story that takes place up north in Michigan, but it happened to my dad. At least, he swears it did. My dad and his buddy were staying a weekend up at the cabin, and they were having a fire near the front driveway by the small cabin. They were drinking beers and telling stories, catching up and whatnot. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, in between the crackling of the fire and his buddy telling a story, they heard a woman cry out, "Help me!" Thinking they were just really buzzed, they paid it no mind and continued their conversation. Then it happened again. "Help me! Please help me!" My dad and his friend looked at each other shocked. "I definitely heard it that time, dude. What do we do?" My dad reached for the flashlight and clicked it on.
"Please help me!"
The woman cried again. My dad shined the flashlight around the woods, trying to locate the woman.
"If you could see us, come towards the light! Come towards us!"
My dad and his buddy shouted as the flashlight lit up the small patch of woods and casting dancing shadows everywhere. Then, all of a sudden, there she was. This skinny, frail-looking woman stumbled out from the shadows. She was covered in blood and her hair was matted. Her dress had been sliced apart. My dad got a sinking feeling in his stomach.
"Oh my God, are you okay? What happened? How can we help?"
This was before cell phones, so there was no way to phone for police. The woman collapsed and my father and his buddy hoisted her up around their shoulders, leading her to a bench where she could sit down. She was sobbing uncontrollably as they draped a blanket over her and did the best they could to tend to her wounds. When she was able to gain her composure, she told my dad and his friend the story. Apparently, she was out with her boyfriend out in the car in the woods, and he wanted to do things that she wasn't ready for. She rejected him, but he tried to force himself on her. He beat her up, slashed her dress, then kicked her out of the car before peeling off. She then started wandering the woods looking for help before stumbling across my dad and his buddy. They cleaned her up a little more and let her crash in the cabin for the night. In the morning, they took her home. She gave them both a hug and a kiss on the cheek before disappearing inside. A few days later, they went back to the house to check on the lady from the woods, but her mother answered the door.
"Can I help you, gentlemen?" she asked.
Yes, ma'am. We dropped off a woman here a few days ago and she was in rough shape. We were just checking in on her."
"Oh, you mean my daughter?"
"I think so. Could we see a picture?"
Her mother went back inside the house and came back with a picture of her daughter. When my dad and his buddy confirmed it was her, the mother gave a little laugh.
"Boys, my daughter has been dead for 10 years. If you did see her, it's because it was the anniversary of her death."
My dad stood there stunned.
I appreciate you coming by, though. It's nice to know she's still around. Her mother chuckled as she shut the door, leaving them speechless. They turned around and headed back to the car. My dad always says that wasn't the scary part. What still baffles him and his friend to this day is when they looked back at the house before pulling the car door open, only to be met with a vacant lot with a for sale sign. One night, me and my friend Sam decided to go smoke somewhere. I get into his beat-up Ford and we set off. I lived in Vermont, where there are plenty of turnoffs and hidden smoke spots you just had to look for to find. So this night, Sam and I were bored, and we decided to go find a new smoking spot. It was already one of those nights where you could already tell we were going to be going out until at least 3 a.m. type of nights. Luckily, I had told my parents that I was staying at his house that night, and his mom wasn't really much around and didn't care what time we got back. We left his house at around 10:30, went to the local dealer, picked up some bud, and started driving down the usual back roads that we lived on our whole life. We started taking random turns just to go on some roads we hadn't been on yet, and after a while, we still weren't making any progress. We were still in high school, so any sign of life or the possibility of a spot having a cop freaked us out and narrowed down our options quite a bit. Eventually, we found ourselves quite literally in the middle of nowhere just driving down winding back roads. I see what looks like a spot with some potential, a turnoff with no sign or markings of any kind. We turn up the road in his beat-up white Ford and head up what appears to be an access road to some power lines. After a while of driving up this access road, which was just two tire tracks separated by some grass, we get to the top, and there's a small clearing in a makeshift parking lot where some service vehicles are able to access the power lines. We set up in the front seat with the car on and headlights still pointing at the forest while we hit a few bowls from the tube. After a little time, there was a lull in conversation, and we were both just kind of baked as hell, looking at the forest in front of us that the headlights had lit up. Suddenly, Sam sits up from his seat and asks me, "Is that a deer?" I sit up in the front seat and look out the window to what he is pointing at. From where I was sitting, it looked like a deer resting on the gravel, but it was sitting almost unnaturally. Sam threw the car into gear and pulled up alongside to it. We both got out, turned off the car, and pulled out our phone's flashlights. We walk over next to it. We realize it is a deer, but not all of it. It was the head and the skin, but there was no meat on it or any blood, just the head attached to the skin. We both just kind of started saying to each other things like, "What the F?" as we started looking at it for a bit. "Why would a hunter fully clean the deer and just leave the head and the skin?" I said a little off put, and then all of a sudden, "I don't know, man," he says as he picks up a stick. He flips it over and some strange symbol is carved onto the other side of it. It looks almost like a plus sign except for all the lines were curved and it was embellished with some strange ancient marks. We didn't think to take a picture of it, but in hindsight, we probably should have. Almost right after this, we hear noises coming from down along the power lines. For those of you who don't know where there are big power lines running through the forest, they clear all the forest under it, which leaves a narrow strip of clearing stretching the length of the power lines. The access road was on a ridge line of sorts, and the power line ran perpendicular to the ridge, so we could see all the way down the hill into the valley and then up the other side through the narrow strip of clearing where there wasn't any trees. Right after we heard the noises, we turned our flashlights off since we both assumed that it was some service workers about to bust us, since who the hell else would be up here?
We both stopped and listened to the sounds for a second. They were pretty distant, so we moved to the edge of the gravel lot to where we could hear them better. We hear the noises getting louder. It sounded like a bunch of people breaking sticks. And all of a sudden, we see 20, 25 people burst out of the tree line about 100 yards down from us, full on sprinting from the tree line across the clearing. The starlight was bright enough to where I could make out that the men were also wearing all black Amish looking clothing, but without the hats, and the women were wearing all white dresses, holding them above their knees, sprinting across the clearing. We had no idea why they were running, but almost instantly, me and Sam had the same idea. We both made a beeline for his car, and Sam peeled out of the gravel parking lot and headed back down the access road. The entire time in the passenger seat, I'm just saying, "What the F, what the F, what the F?" We both just started laughing at the insanity of what we had just saw. At this point, we are doing about 60 down the barely marked road, when out of nowhere, in a split second, I see two shining dots in front of us, then huge yellow eyes, and then this massive silhouette that fills the whole windshield, and then bang. We both audibly screamed and my balls went so far into my body. Sam slammed on the brakes and screamed, "Was that a frickin' owl?" I just remember screaming, "We're not frickin' stopping! Go, 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 go!" We make it back onto the main road, and then back to his house at about 2:30 a.m., and smoke some more, and just talk about what the F we just saw. To this day, we still talk about it, and neither of us know what it was that we saw. Were those people running towards something or away from something? Although it doesn't really make much sense, we both feel that the owl was related to what we had saw. We just don't know how. I never wanted to go to church camp, but my parents insisted it would be good for me. They said it would help me connect with God and make new friends. I didn't care about either of those things. All I cared about was getting out of there alive. The camp was called Connacook, and it was located on Table Rock Lake in Missouri. It looked like any other summer camp, with cabins and a mess hall and a lake for swimming. But there was something off about the place. Something that made my skin crawl. Maybe it was the way everyone seemed so happy all the time, like we were all part of some secret club that I wasn't allowed to join. Maybe it was the way they talked about God as if he were their best friend, their confidant, their savior. Maybe it was just me being paranoid. But then again, maybe not. It started on the first night of camp. We had just finished dinner, and were heading back to our cabins when we heard a strange noise coming from the woods. It sounded like someone or something was moving through the trees, rustling leaves and snapping twigs. At first, we thought it might be one of the counselors playing a prank on us, but then we saw her face, pale as death, peering out from behind a tree trunk. "Did you hear that?" she whispered urgently. We nodded mutely. "It's probably just an animal," one of us said weakly. But we all knew it wasn't true. The noise grew louder as whatever it was got closer to our cabin. We could hear its breathing now, ragged and heavy, as if it had been running for miles without stopping. Then suddenly it stopped altogether, right outside our door. We froze in terror as we waited for whatever it was to come bursting through the door at any moment. But it didn't. Instead, we heard a soft tapping sound, like someone was trying to get our attention. We looked at each other, unsure of what to do. Should we open the door and see who it was or what was out there? Or should we stay put and hope it would just go away? Before we could decide, the tapping stopped, and we heard footsteps retreating back into the woods. We never did find out what it was that night, whether it was a person or an animal or something else entirely. But that wasn't the end of our troubles at Kennekuk. Over the next few days, strange things started happening all around us. We would hear voices in the middle of the night, whispering secrets that we couldn't quite make out. We would see shadows moving across our windows, even though there was no one outside. And then there were the dreams. Every night I would dream about something different. A dark figure climbing stairs in the forest. A faceless man watching me from behind a tree. A voice calling my name from somewhere far away. At first, I thought they were just nightmares brought on by my anxiety about being at camp. But then I started hearing other kids talking about their strange dreams. Dreams that seemed too real to be mere figments of their imagination. One girl told me that she dreamed about being chased through the woods by a siren with legs that sounded like her parents. Another boy said that he had dreamt about drowning in Table Rock's lake while something pulled him down deeper and deeper into its murky depths. And then there were those who didn't talk about their dreams at all. Those who seemed distant and distracted, as if they were living in some other world altogether. I tried to tell myself that it was all just a coincidence, that these things happened at every summer camp. But deep down, I knew better. There was something sinister lurking beneath the surface of Kennekuk. Something that was slowly but surely driving us all mad. It wasn't until the last night of camp that we finally found out what it was. We were all gathered around the campfire, singing songs and roasting marshmallows, when one of the counselors suddenly stood up and began to speak in a strange language that none of us could understand. At first, we thought it was some kind of joke, a way to scare us before sending us back home. But then we saw the look on her face, the wild, desperate look that told us she wasn't joking at all. And then we heard it, a low rumbling sound coming from deep within the woods. It grew louder and louder until it was all we could hear, drowning out our screams and cries for help. And then suddenly everything went quiet again, as if nothing had ever happened. We never did find out what caused that noise, or what made our counselor speak in tongues. But I know one thing for sure. I would never go back to Kennekuk again. Not after what I had seen and heard there. God, I hate church camp.